So tonight is a special celebration that we do each year, and that is where we celebrate the lives of our animal companions. And we call it the Blessing of the Beasts. And this is something that for me is very special, as it is, for, I know, for many of our members and for most people out there who realize that our animal companions are very, very important to us, and that they give us so much. And so it's so important to be grateful and give thanks for them. So that's what we're doing today. The reading for tonight comes from a very ancient Buddhist text, which is called the Gateless Gate. And the Gateless Gate is a collection of Buddhist stories that are designed to help one better understand the teachings of oneness. And so one of the most famous ones is called Joshua's Dog. And according to the story, one day Sensei Joshua and his student were taking a walk in the woods when the student asked, "Sensei, does a dog have Buddha nature?" Sensei Joshua simply replied, "Moo." So anybody who's been looking at Buddhism at all, particularly the Zen tradition, has heard of that particular story. In some versions, there was a dog barking off in the distance, which is what prompted the student to ask the question. But the answer that he gives, which is the word M-U, which is Japanese, in Chinese it's W-U, has many different meanings. And this particular story has probably more interpretations than probably almost any other piece of literature in the Buddhist lexicon. And so there's a lot of different ways that you can interpret this. Now, looking at it on its face, the answer that Joshua gives the student is no. So when the student hears the dog barking off in the distance, he turns to Joshua and says, does a dog have Buddha nature? Now, the context for him asking this question would have been all of the sutras and all of the teachings and doctrines that would have affirmed this concept of Buddha nature, that all beings have it. And this student was probably just clarifying, is this something that's for everyone, or is it just for humans? And so the enigmatic answer, mu, or no, needs explanation. The main meaning of all the teachings of the Buddha are to help us, the main meaning is to help us to overcome this sense of separation, the sense that we don't belong. In other words, if you think that you can summarize everything by saying, what is a Buddha? A Buddha is a being who awakens to the oneness of all life. Then oneness, or the teachings of the interconnectedness of all life, becomes the foundation. But the problem is that our language and the way we communicate always involves usually a binary. So when we're thinking of oneness, and then we have to deal with the diversity of the way language works, and whether that would be something mathematical or musical or just plain old verbal world intercourse, it's always involving sounds that represent images, which represent concepts. And so there's no way to escape that. But what we want to do is not pretend that there aren't a myriad of diversity, but we want to try to talk or speak in such a way as that we always remember that each of those individual things represents the whole. So even though we might talk about an individual thing, we know that that individual thing represents the whole. And it's very important. And so when Joshua's student asked this question, it's a very important question, actually, because how we use our language, how we use words, is so powerful. Something that I say very often, that my father used to say, was that words are the fingers that shape the mind. And so if you're using words, but you haven't really sharply defined them, and you don't really have a ready, easy definition, then neither does your mind. And so it will begin to look for things to try to fill up that gap. And sometimes that won't be very effective. So that's why it's very important for us to understand the words that we use, why we use them, and study the deeper meaning of them. Because whether we're aware of it or not, those words are shaping the way we think. So when we look at this conversation between Joshua and the students, it's very, very important. One of the distinguishments we make in the four direction system of mindfulness is concerning one of our mindfulness models, which is the true self and ego self model. And in that, we help folks to distinguish between the true self, which is a way of talking about our being, and the ego self, which is a way of talking about doing and having, or not doing and not having. And so it's very critical for us to understand that when we are going about our lives, that when we do something, maybe we make a mistake, or maybe, you know, we mess up in some fashion, it's important for us to understand that's not making a statement about our being. It's only making a statement about our doing and having. And when we're clear about that, when we've learned through practice to reorient ourselves from the true self perspective, where we learn to accept and embrace the ego, then we can learn. It's very hard for us to learn anything whenever the ego self is the center, where we're trying to define our being through the world of doing and having. As long as we're doing that, it's going to be very hard for us to really learn, because our whole sense of self-worth, our whole sense of self-estimation, feels like it's under attack when we get criticized. And if we're clear, it doesn't mean that. And it allows us to look at ourselves honestly and say, you know, maybe I could do this better. Maybe that was a mistake. And it's okay, because it doesn't mean that my whole being now has been somehow demoted. You can't touch that part. That is an inherent gift. And that is an inherent grace that we live out of once we awaken to this reality. And this perspective allows us to look at the ego self with compassion and understanding, and also discipline. And so that's why that shift is so important. So the question that the student is asking Joshua is a lot more meaningful than some, you know, philosophical doctrine. It's really about practice and the way we understand practice. So what he's saying is, does a dog have Buddha nature? Well, he's saying have, right? So immediately he's putting it in the doing and having side. So he's confusing Buddha nature with doing and having. And that's why Joshua says no. Because he's confusing being with doing and having. Buddha nature is another term for the ground of being. Having refers to the ego self realm. So a way that could have been clearer for the student would have been to just affirm that a dog does not have Buddha nature, but rather that a dog is Buddha nature. And I know it sounds like semantics, but it's the difference between the universe and everything else. It seems hair thin, and yet it changes entire worlds. And that's what was trying to be conveyed by Joshua's no. He's saying, no, we don't have Buddha nature. It's not a possession. It's not something that we earn through practice. It's not something that we lose through not practicing. It's an understanding. In Japanese, they call it shinjin. It means true and trusting. That once we understand this, and even if we don't at the beginning really believe it, but we just try it out pragmatically, we begin to see the virtue of it. And in time, most of us realize that it's not just a nice idea, that it represents the deepest nature of reality itself. So the person who asked the question, the dear sensei question, was very specific to me, which was, dear sensei, does your beloved cat, Sir Basil, have Buddha nature? My answer is no. He is Buddha nature. He is a part of the very great cosmic chain of being. He is Buddha nature. He doesn't have it. He is it. So when we honor our animal companions tonight, I really want you to think about that. That it's not that we look at them and ask, do they have Buddha nature? Do they not have it? It's more the clarity that they are Buddha nature. That it's inherent. And as I said, perhaps their sentiency is not quite the same as ours, but they are part of this oneness. And there's nothing that separates us from that oneness. Occasionally I'll get someone who will ask me, when they lose a beloved pet, when a beloved pet dies, they'll ask me, well, you know, sensei, will I ever see this creature again? Will I ever know this? And I tell them that nothing in oneness is lost. So I can't specifically say how that might manifest. I can assure them that in oneness there is no separation. None whatsoever.